Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the September 20 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. Our panelists today include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Kurt, this was an interesting week. It started with the president and the Trump administration levying another $200 billion worth of tariffs on the Chinese economy. And Wall Street simply shrugged it off.
Well, so far it has, and it's getting to a point, you know, it's common news. It's advertised ahead, and they're following through with it. China's actually going to start running out of products in general to put tariffs on, as we buy a lot more from them than they do from us. However, though, late in the week, we did see headline news that China probably lowered some of the percentage of tariffs to their major trading partners. I don't believe that's going to include the U.S. or not. But then, too, there's talk of China putting together a stimulus package for their country to help them through some of the pain that they're starting to see with this.
One of the other things that happened this week, at least earlier in the week, Wayne Nelson, was that the S&P 500 made new highs, the Dow making new highs as well.
Yeah, like you said, they're going on and everything's looking rosy as far as the rest of the industry. Actually, it's the ag industry that's taking the brunt of this tariffs here right now. And everybody else, actually, they have sort of strengthened some of the other things that are going on. But we've seen some other things sort of happening. We're seeing the bonds going down, interest rates sort of creeping on up. Will we maybe see that last interest raise? That's one thing we're looking at. The Brent is over $80 now. The WTI is over 70. That's generally an energy thing and also looks like it's going to be a little inflationary. And we've seen copper seen a 2 to 3 day rally here this week. Copper is generally an indicator of the economy and whether things are going to start rolling again. So all of these outsider macro type things, not the micro things, but the macro things, are looking very positive right now.
So we have a positive economy, despite the fact that we're in what I'll call now a trade war because of this last $200 billion. That would go against the grain of what most economists say, although we won't know until Monday, maybe, when the $200 billion actually goes into place. What, how do you see this playing out over the next 3 months should nothing else change, just the $200 billion from the United States, another $60 billion from China?
Well, we definitely have the economy going great guns, and I think we're going kind of the opposite of what China is. I think I was looking at some numbers today, and China's really kind of having some problems in their economy, and their stock market's down about 17% in the last 6 to 8 months. As far as how it's going to play out, I wish I knew the exact answer to that. But I think that we're kind of getting to the point now where we've kind of got to the limit as far as what we can do from the standpoint, or China has as far as the retaliatory part of it. One thing I was looking at today is that, you know, our bean sales with this morning's export sales announcement, we're really not that far behind. We're really right on pace from what the USDA says. So I think we go along. I think we continue to sell beans. We're quite a bit cheaper. I think some $80 a ton cheaper than Brazil on beans and Argentina on beans. So I think we sell to other people, probably not so much China. And from the agriculture standpoint, I think we, as we go through the next 3 months here, I think we realize that, as maybe Wall Street did in the last couple of weeks here on the economy, that, you know, it's not going to be an extreme hurt to the agricultural economy, that we are going to be able to continue to see demand grow.
Are you surprised that the USDA numbers, at least to this point, are being met on the export side for soybeans? The USDA said, look, we're looking out. We've already put what we believe won't be exported out of the market into our numbers, released in the September, even the August reports. Does this make sense to you?
Well, the function of the market was it went lower and stimulated demand, and we've seen demand from other countries. We've got basically the cheapest grain in the world right now, particularly wheat and corn and beans not far behind. So we've picked up a ton of non-traditional buyers. In fact, Thursday it was talked that China bought 5 cargoes from Argentina and Argentina bought 5 cargoes from us. But going into midday on Friday, it was up towards 15 to 20 cargoes that China bought from Argentina and Argentina was buying it from us. So there's some cat and mouse games going on. The world protein demand remains strong. We're seeing economic growth other than this bill that hit on there. We might be losing a little bit of economic growth in China here. But world protein demand's there. World livestock numbers are there. So it's just a shuffling around. And if we continue this trend, we won't exceed the export demand, but we'll stay close to it.
Any reason, Kurt, to think that this week will have been the bottom or the harvest low for the marketplace?
Boy, if you're a technician, it looks good. I mean, the September went off the board. The next contracts went down. In November, beans went right to the September low, filled the gap there. The corn did not quite do it. We're in a position here. We're 10 weeks off. If you're a cycle follower, it's the 10-week. We've got a weekly reversal in the works going to the upside here. Beans are in a position to record a monthly price reversal to the upside. Corn's got a little work. We got to get these corn up to that 265 to get a monthly reversal up. The momentum indicators are all oversold. So we're in the process. We need to keep an eye on it. This weekend's the first day of fall seasonal trends, changing trend, changing season. But if you go back to the LDP days, sometimes you really don't get those lows confirmed until Columbus Day holiday.
And so it takes a while. However, we have been a couple of weeks ahead all year long, and for this harvest low to come early would seem to go along with what this season looks like, even if it's not quite where the seasonals are normally in any given year.
You know, I love everything Kurt said, and I hope, like the Dickens, he's right. But then again, there's some of us silly fundamental people who says, you know, there's no real rally until we see the basis improve. The basis has done nothing but widen and stay very, very wide. We've got places in the Dakotas where there's no cash beans on the board elevator for cash beans. We're seeing that the DP charges, the storage charges, are adding up really fast. It's going to be maybe 45 to 50 cents just to store through March on commercial storage and that way. So there's a lot of things that way. We're hearing train cars are somewhat hard to get now, and we're hearing that everybody is scared of running out of storage. Now, on the other hand, I'm hearing farmers are going to store every little bit they can, not crowd the elevators. They bought baggers. They put up bins. They've cleaned out tool sheds, and they're going strong. On the other hand, I've heard 250, 260 bushel corn. I've heard 80, 85 bushel beans. Nothing under 55 as far as anything, and very few numbers. Most of our numbers are telling us over in our area we're at a record crop for right now. But, you know, I haven't seen any elevator lines, and yet I'm seeing fields emptied up really, really fast.
I made that same trip about 80 miles, and I was surprised across parts of central Illinois how much grain really was gone through the Hayworth area. The corn's gone. You get over into the Lincoln area again. A lot of the corn gone. In our Champaign County area, not as much, but it's moving really, really fast.
Yeah, I think the farmers have done a really good job of preparing for the big crop. They've known for a while in the areas where it is big that they've got a good crop out there. We've built a lot of storage in the Midwest here since 2010, really, and I think that comes into play. Going back to the question on the lows, I think, I could agree with both these guys. I think from a chart standpoint, it really looks like we could be, but we still have a lot of grain to put away out there, too. On the other hand, in the last 9 years, eight out of the last 9 years, we've had those lows come in someplace, you know, in the late August, late July to late September time frame. So the timing's about right here. I hope, as Wayne said, I hope that we've seen the lows, but we probably have a lot of push towards the end as we start getting storage filled and that could push us lower and test those lows again, I think.
So this really is a tale of two cities, relatively speaking. One on the chart sides, or in Chicago, which looks more positive, yet the basis levels, the cash levels, are going to drag along.
Yeah, on the chart side, even though we got a low in place, we can have the roll down effect in through here. So, you know, as the DEIS goes off, the March could roll down, the May could roll down. So a big rally above $4, a big rally to $10 will be awful hard to overcome because of the cash equation. We've seen a lot of guys go through the marketing programs with these grain elevators, and so these grain elevators have a lot of cash grain on their hands this fall. And it's quite evident in the basis levels as you move on out into the first of the year. There's huge, huge price difference between fall and January. In fact, if you take our fall price where I'm at for beans versus July, it's a $1.10 spread. Corn's about 70 cents from the local cash price to the July futures, which tells me we've got a carry market in through here. And at some point in time in through here, once we get through harvest and everything finds a home, the cash markets to stabilize. And once we get past the first year, I think you'll be looking at better cash bids as the grain finds a home.
So it's all about figuring out where you're going to put your grain at this point and how you're going to store it.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people have been talking about. In fact, there's been cases where grain elevators have come through and raised storage rates and DP rates just to say, hey, we got storage issues, we demand a premium for it. And I don't think that's right, but that's part of the issues you got to work through. But the main thing is to have some staying power if you do move cash grain. I don't want to really give up a whole lot of ownership at these lower levels.
A couple of things, I guess, as we're talking about the strategy and what a person wants to do. I think definitely storing it in your own storage or something that you can do like that would be the best thing. I know we're seeing a lot of bagging going on in south of Springfield, some of that area down there on corn. But I guess two things. One is I think that a person really needs to sit down and look at his dollars per acre, especially on the soybeans. I've gone through some calculations with guys, and when you look at the MFP payment, you look at if you sold maybe 50% of an average crop and now you've got a little bit better crop than what you thought. I did one the other day and we ended up with about $700+ an acre if we sat down and sold the grain out there into the spring, January through March period. Corn, same thing, although your numbers don't look as good there. So I think you store it, but I don't think you just store it and put it away and don't worry about it. I think you get aggressive on looking out there and locking in some of that carry that Kurt was talking about in the market so that you can set the basis at a later date, or in some cases they're giving you pretty good cash forward basis levels already out in January and March.
We're looking at two tremendous negotiators. Is there anybody any tougher than the Chinese, or anybody more unpredictable than Mr. Trump? I think that is going to be the story on what our basis could be come first of the year. But let's remember, we were talking about an $800 million carryover before we took the cut from the Chinese deal not going through or the tariffs going on. So I don't know that our bean basis is going to recover near as fast as the corn basis could. We didn't sell China hardly any corn. We do need to open things back up so we can sell them some DDGs and some of the ethanol to keep our ethanol going at the speed we were going. We do need to be pressing all of our senators. It's an election year on some of these people. We need to be talking about, let's get this E15 pushed through and done. And we need to quit giving RIN credits to all these other people. We need to keep this going. The RFS standard is a very, very, very important thing to get this corn market back and growing. And then let's remember, we looked at Informa's numbers. Wow, we jumped the corn numbers a bunch. We cut the bean numbers a bunch, which we're going to have to, or else we're still going to have a billion bushel bean carryover. But we've got a lot more corn to work through and get done. And unfortunately, we're looking at a lot less chickens that drowned. We're looking at a lot less hogs that have African swine flu, and dead pigs don't eat much.
So speaking of some of those numbers, the Informa figures at 93 million bushels or 93 million acres next year for corn. That's up substantially. And soybeans down to 82.3, if I remember correctly, million acres. That one is really down. So those numbers change the complexion of what you have to think about for the future as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think a couple of things. One is we got the stocks report at the end of the month here. I think that could be important and could have some indication as to where we ended up this last year. And I don't really expect any surprises there, but you never really do. The other is if you look at the USDA or WASD ending stocks numbers and compare like September of the beginning of the crop year to the following September, about 27% is about the average in the last 9 years that's dropped. Now, that still only brings you down to 600 million carryout, but if you do that and maybe have a pretty good switch in acreage, then I think you maybe can keep the beans fairly well supported as we go in. So those are some of the things. And looking forward, what Brazil does as far as their acreage, there's quite a debate out there going on right now on whether they actually expand acres or not when they're looking at the prices that they're looking at for next year.
When you look into 2019, how, in thinking about corn acreage, what does that tell you about pricing the 2018 corn crop? Because at some point, we'll start to really think about those numbers probably in March, and we have to consider what that means.
Yeah, I think you have to be fairly aggressive on your 2019 marketing because I think logically there probably will be an increase in acres. I typically starting to make your sales on the next year's crop in the middle of harvest of this year isn't the best time to do it. But I think as you come out of harvest and start looking at $4 plus in December 19 corn, I think that's something that you really got to have some offers in mind and that type of thing.
Yeah, I agree. You get above $4, preferably $4.20, $4.25 if we can. I think you got to lay into it. And I remember last winter we were in here visiting about marketing ideas, and O'Chip was sitting across the table, and basically I said, the KISS theory, keep it simple, stupid, just defend $4. And I think that's the same strategy this winter for this 19 crop, to put a $4 floor under there and keep the upside open.
I agree with both the guys. One of the things that I just wanted to say was when we saw this little rally coming on and we know we're going to have some extra bushels we're going to sell or need to sell for some cash money, we bought some 850 bean calls for under 17 cents today on Thursday here and some 870s for under 10 or right at 10 cents. Now, we're looking at those with the idea is they won't feel so bad if we get a rally here because they can go ahead and sell those cash beans and they've got a call in place. You know, and if they, you know, and they won't just be buying futures that if they do decide to set back 20 cents, they're not going to lose everything that way along the line. We did the same thing in the Dease corn. We bought some 355 calls for under a dime. So those were things that it's going to give us some courage to sell stuff and to maybe, you know, have something replaced. They're not going to be, you know, they're only going to taste to Thanksgiving, but I think we're going to know an awful lot how this basis level is going to react by that point in time.
How important is it that we've begun to really reallocate some of the soybean exports around the planet coming out of the United States? For instance, the European Union now, for the last 12 weeks, has been importing far more soybeans from the United States than they have from Brazil. That may be just price-related, though it may be in part from the Trump administration's discussions with them earlier in the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably very simple. Like I said, this morning I was looking at the bean prices. Brazilian port was about $380 a ton. U.S. was about $307. If there's a country there that doesn't have the tariff on it, where are they going to go buy the beans? They're going to buy the beans from the United States because of the fact that they're that much cheaper. We're still in that process, and it's still a lot of logistics and transportation, that part of it, I think, that we have to figure out. But I really think the overall global demand isn't going to be down that much, and we're just, as you said, reallocating who's providing what.
So let's come back to something I think you've all talked about just a little bit. Rather than thinking about price, you've been talking, I believe, to your clientele about dollars per acre, so price times yield, simply because the yield is so high. Have you got some numbers in the back of your mind where you can discuss this with producers, is what it really does mean when you sit down and you pencil it all out?
if you compare it to the cash bid, I mean, the wide basis, it's different. And that's going to be quite interesting as we enter the insurance price-determining period here this fall on the fall price. And you got my cash bid way down here. I got my futures average price higher. That's going to be probably a little discouraging. But the thing is, you still got to push the pencil, and it's easier said than done, especially for those guys in the east northeastern part of the state. They don't have the 280, 290 bushel. They've got 130, 160 bushels, and they got 40, 50 bushel beans versus these 90 bushel beans in the south on this lighter soil. So it's a math thing. You got to sit down and pencil out your own situation.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I was going to say. It's not not real promising looking when you get into some of those areas where they do have the poor yields. But everybody's so much different. It really depends on how much you've got sold ahead of time, what you've got the ability to store yourself, and how much you have to take to town, and all those factors have to come into play. But I think it really is important, and we kind of have a spreadsheet that we use to go through it with a farmer to come up and say, okay, if I store it all and sell it for the spring with what I've already got sold, what are my numbers going to look like? As far as just overall general thoughts, Todd, the beans really look pretty good for the most part, it seems like to me right now. If I do something to go ahead and get the prices locked in, the corn, not so much. The corn, even with some of the bigger yields, are still not showing any big profit levels, but you know, that's a decision a farmer has to look at and see whether it's close enough that you want to avoid any further risk to the downside.
I think a lot's going to depend on three things. Number one, how generous is your banker going to be to let you hang on to this crop for a long season time period? Number two, how much have you pre-sold at decent prices when we were all saying sell $4 corn, sells $10 beans, and then we had scale-up prices that never got to. So, and we also sold a smaller percentage than what we thought, thank God, because we need the bushels now along the way. The big deal is going to be, can we continue to get the extra bushels from Europe, from other places that generally go to Argentina and Brazil when we were supplying China? Can we maybe see the difficulty in Brazil and Argentina of not planting as many acres of beans as they were projecting? Because if we both got a whole bunch of beans, it doesn't matter whether we got the contract or not, the price for next year or what's extra is going to be lower. So I think it's going to be very good that way. The world weather is going to be a big thing. We're going to look at it. But I think the majority of farmers are going to stick as much grain away as they can and try to see if we can't get some sort of basis improvement. You know, when you're talking, what, $1.75 under up in the Minnesota, that area along the way, we've got another big thing that's maybe going to help us. If you watched Agribull this morning, why he's talking about a whole lot of rain in the Dakotas, Minnesota, and Iowa, and that could hurt some of our yields. And they've had more variable yields in that area than we have here in central Illinois, in central Indiana, and in that way. So that could help bring down that big government average. And hey, if we could chop back down to under 180 on the corn, it would be very, very helpful and give us a lot better chance as to get some of the basis levels moving back together. But I do think we need to keep an eye, and when you see a decent basis level, whether you're ready to price the corn or not, lock that basis in.
Yeah, and I think one other thing I just wanted to add to what Wayne was saying, diversify. There is no one answer that you know is correct. So diversify, do some storage, do some forward sales, do some basis contracts and that. So I think you just got to keep your flexibility in it.
So you've suggested, and I'll come back around to you in just a second, Bill, that when producers take grain to town, that they have to put it in storage. And I think this is what you told me. They may want to go ahead and sell it, but they need to have a plan to market it in another way so that they re-own it in some form or have it covered in some other option. So maybe from all three of you, what are those kinds of plans?
Well, it varies on your comfort zone. Most people, when they hear the word repurchase or replace, that means just store and hang on because those guys are bullish. And they always don't work that way. But there's several ways you can replace stuff, and I think you've got, if you give up ownership at these lower levels, I think you have to have some type of replacement. And I believe it's got to be in the front end. You don't want to go out and buy 375, 380 July corn. I think you got to look at being long up front here, try to capture 20, 25 cents to the upside. You can bull spread it. I think over time the bull spread's going to kick in once we get halfway through harvest. But you got to have some staying power. I just hate giving up total ownership down here at these lower levels.
Well, I think definitely that's one possibility. If you're going to commercial storage, looking at some nearby calls to replace the sales, but you got to be real careful with that, because in these cases where we have these real weak basis levels, you really want to try to own the cash if you can, I think. And there again, there's a lot of cases where you can go out and maybe within a month or so, you might be able to go ahead and get the cash forward sale on out into January to more than make up for your storage costs, just with the fact that the basis improves that much. But there's, like I say, there's no real magic answers. Hopefully you can diversify as much as you can, and take if you can go out and do an HTA with the elevator, for example, and then lock that basis in later, that's one possibility for the stuff that's in the elevator that you're doing.
All good ideas. Not sure which one's going to work. This is going to be a strange year because of the amount of crop that we have. The basis levels might not come back as fast as you would think. But then again, we could, you know, our president's a wizard. I mean, it could be something done, pulled off right before the midterm elections that makes everything look quite rosy. And with that along the way, if you got a bullish attitude going towards this, or an attitude that might not kill you if you were wrong and trying to stay long some of this, it could be the very right thing to do. We're going to want to have control of at least 50% of our unpriced grain.
Let's get a final word from each of you. I think Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities will start with you, please.
I believe it's a conspiracy theory. I think the commercials keeping the price low to buy the cheap grain. I think the insurance companies are heavily long the futures market to keep a high so they don't have to pay out insurance premium. I wouldn't trust anybody. But I would trust what to do this coming week. The best day to do jams and jellies is on the 22nd to 24th. Cut hay the 25th, 26th, and talk to your spouse on the 23rd and 24th.
So only those 2 days. Gotcha. I'll see what I can do about that. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
I think we're going to have to watch this market really close. I think as I was talking with Dan this morning, Dan Zwicker, we decided that, that basically we generally see a comeback in this market starting about the second week of October. And I think we want to look towards that. It can happen a little bit early. A lot of things happen a little early this year. But we want to be prepared for that. And we might want to be putting some calls on a little bit before that happens.
And Bill Mayer.
I'll just finish up with, I think the main thing that you have to do, like I said earlier, is be realistic. You have to look at realistically where's your revenue per acre and is that something you can live with, and realistically look at what potential there is in the marketplace. We still have a big crop. It may be down some from the 181, as Wayne was saying earlier, but be realistic that whenever we see these rallies, when we see these basis improvements, cash is going to get moved against it, and watch the basis levels, because once they start to improve, that's a signal that you're starting to see maybe the harvest low get in there.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can look it up and listen to it on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing. He's from right here in Champaign County. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.